scary basement. Each week, me and my friend Mike are drawn inexplicably and supernaturally to this basement, which is full of mustache-twirling villains, a sentient Venus flytrap with a cute little bow tie, a dog with no soul, and a fly with the head of a human, and a human with the head of a fly. I'm Roxy Polk.
And I'm Mikey McCaller. Let me tell you, Roxy, seeing a dog with no soul is actually comforting to me, because in high school, I had a very religious friend who told me that the Bible says specifically that no dogs have souls and therefore cannot go to heaven. So I cradled my beautiful, beloved dog, Cujo, who is a 4-pound toy poodle, and he told me, I'm sorry, your dog is not going to heaven.
That is
now I got evidence.
That is a fucking nightmare. Your childhood friend sucks, and how dare they say that? And the Bible's wrong if it says dogs don't, if there's an actual verse. I feel like that kid made that up, but if there's an actual verse that says dogs don't go to heaven or don't have souls or some such, then fuck all that. I don't
imagine. Imagine using that as your pitch to convert me to your religion.
That's what he was trying to do. Holy fucking shit.
Well, that's what he was kind of constantly trying.
How old were you again?
I was in ninth grade, you know, as a
That's fucked up. Also, do we need to unpack the fact that your dog was named Cujo? And who was responsible?
Have we not talked about that before?
No.
Yeah, I do know. I know who wrote Cujo. Listen,
your favorite guy.
You can't hate somebody as much as I hate Stephen King without loving them a little bit too. Otherwise you just dismiss them. Yes,
it's true.
Cujo's a pretty good book. There's a weird subplot of a man who is cheating. The mom from Cujo is cheating on her husband, and there's a weird subplot following the man she's cheating with that's messed up. But for the most part, Cujo is a cool, interesting book that doesn't dive into the supernatural when it easily could. And I appreciate Stephen King being at least disciplined on that front. I like Cujo just fine.
So you named the dog Cujo. It wasn't your mother or something?
No, I did. Okay. Oh, listen, that's a funny name for a 4-pound toy poodle. I'll just say it. That's a funny
name. It is very funny. Also, I've never seen Cujo or read Cujo. Mm. And I love that is part of your horror history, a little nugget of Mikey's horror history before we got to the point where we are right now. Toy poodle name.
I feel like it was one of the first. I think it was the first adult book I ever read that was like a big, thick tome. And I was like really proud of myself. Like, yeah, I finished Cujo. Oh, you guys are having trouble finishing Where the Red Fern Grows? Try reading a real dog book.
Do you have a picture of you with Cujo as a child? I want to see some, like, faded photo from the 90s.
I'll find one.
Please send it to me. I need to see it. Anyway, let's start out, as we always do, with the scariest things that happened to us this week. So, Mikey, what went down in your life outside of the scary basement that spooked you to your bones?
Well, Roxy, I have been having a hard time getting back to sleep. I've been waking up around 4 or 5 a.m. and then just like lying in bed, unable to get back to sleep. So the other day, this happened to me at 4 a.m. and I got up out of bed and I was like, well, I'm not getting back to sleep. I should just go for a run at like 5 a.m.
Okay. Look at you.
I did. It was very dark. And I just like run in my neighborhood, you know, and somebody had parked in a like halfway on the sidewalk, so I had to run around a car to get around this to stay on the sidewalk. And around that corner, Roxy, there was an unhoused man who had a headlamp on, and he had like tucked it down just right so I couldn't see any of the light glowing from him. So I turned around and almost ran into this man.
Oh no.
And he just like looked up and like a bright light blinded me. I never get jump scared in real life. I get jump scared all the time playing video games, watching movies, interacting with children's toys. I got jump scared in real life. How terrifying.
Holy shit, Mikey. Yeah, and you probably jump scared that guy too because he heard like you're running and was like, what? So you jump scared each other. Did you just have like one of those comical scenes where you both like just scream at each other and then like
run
in opposite directions?
Honestly, that's what's so scary about having it happen this early and with this headlamp situation. To me, he was just a shadow. Like, I just saw the outline of a man because I was, like, kind of blinded by the light. So I don't know what his reaction was. It could have been anything. He could have been scared. He could have been angry. He could have been contemplative. He could have been disgusted.
He could have been maniacal and being like, hey, 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 gotcha. Got him.
And it's the not knowing that makes it so scary.
In addition to that, Roxy, man, two for one, Mikey, you got a jump scared and fear of the unknown.
Double jump scares. Roxy, what scared you this week?
Now, the thing that scared me that I'm not sure if it's coming through in the audio very well, but I got a cold for, like, the first time since COVID. The last time I've, like, been sick with a cold, I've been sick with plenty of other things, but last time I've been sick with a cold was COVID. And so I woke up this morning feeling absolutely ghastly and was like, oh, fuck, did I get it again? So similarly, I woke up pretty early, not early as early as you with your running fiasco. It was light out. But just sitting here, I had to, like, force myself to eat food so I could take medicine while I was waiting for, like, the at-home COVID test to tell me if I had it or not. And I was like, am I going to have... I just came off of a road trip, so I was like, am I going to have to contact everyone I came into contact with and then isolate myself from my roommates? And I was waiting with anticipation. Luckily, it was not COVID, but now I have to deal with being sick for who knows how long. And you guys get to deal with it on the audio. And, sorry to Mikey, our listeners, and our editor who might have to edit around this.
Yeah, I didn't notice it until you said it. But the moment you were like, I guess I'm sick, I was like, oh, yeah, you sound sick. Like, it almost feels like the, do you remember that episode of Seinfeld where Elaine buys a sweater that has a red dot on it and George points it out? And then she's like, I never would have noticed if you hadn't pointed it out.
Yeah, and now it's all you can think about.
Yeah, you have Schrodinger's sickness in your voice. It's only... only noticeable once it's pointed out.
Yeah, well, luckily the medicine is taking effect, because, hoo boy, I sounded the most congestive you can imagine a person sounding this morning. So, yeah, great. Anyway, someone who never has to worry about being congested is the demon bot, who is coming on over here. Hey, bud, aren't you glad you don't have a flesh body for once?
Mikey and Roxy, there are still computer viruses. They affect demon robot butlers similar to how the cold virus affects you organics. Only it's worse because our metal sinuses rust.
Oh, well, that's fucked up. Who designed you like that? That's diabolical. No wonder you want to get out of there.
A question I ask myself daily. Anyway, this week you were assigned the 1986 film The Fly. Did you watch the film, or are your souls forfeit?
Roxy, I did, in fact, watch The Fly. Did you?
I did, and it was the 1986 one, right? There's, like, five of these or something.
Oh, yes, yeah, okay, the one with Jeff Goldblum.
Okay, yes.
Whew!
Okay.
Then, for guessing the correct version of The Fly, you may keep your souls. For now.
He's gone. Flew away. Right. Mechanical wings sprouted out of his back, and he flew away, like The Fly. Never does, I just realized.
Yeah, actually, because he doesn't get a form that could possibly have wings until the end, yeah. I suppose.
Huh.
Kind of a letdown.
I'm just realizing that disappointment in the moment.
So yes, this week we watch 1986 The Fly, directed by and written by Cronenberg. Is this our first Cronenberg movie?
I think so. Well, it is, because it's the first Cronenberg movie I've ever seen.
What? Really?
I knew him only by reputation as the body horror guy. I've never seen a Cronenberg movie.
Okay, yeah.
Now, well, I have.
Now we gotta, like, watch Scanners, which I haven't seen, and Videodrome, which I also haven't seen.
Let's do it. Ooh, I would be very up for Videodrome.
All right, so how about for everyone listening up at the basement door, we give them a plot summary of the movie The Fly.
I love it. We open with Seth Brundle, a genius scientist working on a teleportation machine. He meets Veronica, a journalist, at a press event, and the two of them decide to team up, with Veronica documenting his journey into perfecting this transportation machine, and Brundle offering her an exclusive to cover his work.
As time passes, Seth and Veronica start a romantic relationship, something that Veronica's ex-boyfriend, Stathis, how is Stathis a name? I've never heard of it before. Is it made up? I don't know. Anyway, Stathis, her ex-boyfriend, is not too thrilled about this. He's still in love with Veronica, and also her boss, so he holds a lot of power over her, and then threatens to steal the story covering Seth and his machine due to his jealousy. Great.
Seth is able to transport inanimate objects between the two machines pretty easily, but not living things, as a baboon dies when it's not reconstructed correctly in the second teleportation pod. It's quite gory and upsetting, poor little monkey. Eventually, though, Seth realizes that the computer just doesn't understand the complexity of living creatures, and it needs to be taught this information more directly. And so, Seth begins to give the computer what it needs, and works nonstop.
Eventually, Seth is able to teleport a second baboon correctly after all his hard work, and has now been able to succeed in his experiment of revolutionizing travel and transportation. Veronica wants to celebrate with him, but she knows she needs to make sure Stathis doesn't steal her story out from under her, so she goes to him to negotiate. However, she doesn't tell this to Seth, who just assumes she has gone back to her former boyfriend. I don't understand why she didn't say it, she just didn't.
Seth then becomes sad, reckless, and drunk, as he worries about Veronica leaving him, and he decides to do the ultimate experiment, teleporting himself in the pod. Seth sets up a camera for posterity, and in his drunken state, he does not realize that a fly has ended up in the pod with him. This causes Seth to teleport with the fly. However, the computer becomes confused and merges them at the molecular level instead of teleporting them separately.
After the teleportation, Seth is much more athletic, strong, confident, and has an increased sex drive. At first, Seth and Veronica are enjoying the success of the experiment, going out on cute little dates and becoming closer. However, Seth's behavior starts to become erratic. He's obsessed with sugar, starts to twitch, and talks nonstop. It then becomes too much for Veronica when he tries to force her to teleport in the pod to become like him, thinking that his new state is an elevated form of human and that everyone should want to be like him.
Veronica leaves and takes the strange hairs she found growing out of Seth's back to a lab. Meanwhile, Seth is going off the rails. He goes to a dive bar and breaks a man's arm so badly in an arm wrestling contest that his bone snaps out of the skin. Seth then takes home a girl at the bar and has sex with her, and then tries to get her to go into the pod to teleport. It's his kink. You want to just try my teleport pod quick?
New kink unlocked.
Luckily, Veronica shows up and saves the girl's life and stops Seth, but she also has bad news, as the hairs growing out of Seth's back are not human, they are from an insect.
Confused, Seth throws her out, unwilling to think about what she's saying. But when his fingernails start to fall off and his skin becomes distorted, he checks the computer and finds that a fly was in the teleporter with him. And then instead of transporting them both separately, it spliced them molecularly together. His transporter is actually a gene splicer now, and the horrifying truth of what he is experiencing is now explained.
Weeks later, Seth's body has gotten worse, and Veronica comes back. Seth names himself Brundlefly and tells Veronica what has happened with the teleporting gene splicing him, how he's continuing to change and deteriorate into something new and horrifying. Seth can now walk on ceilings and can no longer eat normally. Instead, he has to vomit digestive enzymes onto his food before consuming it. It's very gross.
Veronica has come to talk to Seth in the first place because she's found out she's pregnant, and her former boyfriend, Stathis, is helping her through getting an abortion and confronting Seth. However, when Veronica sees Seth in this state, she can't bring herself to tell him. And Seth also realizes that his human reasoning and compassion are being overtaken by the fly, whose insect instincts have no nuance, and he is afraid that he will hurt Veronica and tells her to leave.
Seth overhears Veronica tearfully telling Stathis that she was unable to tell Seth about the baby, and that she needs to go get the abortion immediately. However, while in the doctor's office, Seth breaks in and kidnaps Veronica. Stathis shows up to Seth's house with a gun and is incapacitated, losing his hand and foot to Seth's gross digestive enzyme vomit. They melt right after he barfs on them.
Right as Seth is about to kill Stathis, Veronica stops him. Seth complies and tells her that he doesn't want her to kill the baby. His insect instincts to preserve himself are causing him to want to splice Veronica, the baby, and himself to try to regain his deteriorating humanity. He says they'll become the ultimate family, a single entity. Sounds like a true horror. Veronica, of course, does not want this, and in the ensuing struggle, she rips off Seth's jaw as he fully transforms into a horrific fly creature, busting out of his humanoid Seth shape and becoming an inhuman-looking insect monster.
Who, to be clear, still does not have wings.
Yep.
Veronica is forced into a pod, and a countdown begins to splice them all together. Stathis wakes up, and he's weak and can barely move, but he is able to just barely shoot the connection to the pod, which spares Veronica and frees her. The machine then gets confused and merges Seth with the pod itself, transforming him into a biomechanical monstrosity that can only pathetically crawl on the ground. Veronica grabs the shotgun and knows she must end Seth's life, but she can't bring herself to do it. Eventually, Seth, in his monstrous form, weakly grabs the shotgun barrel and aims it at his own head, begging Veronica to end him and his suffering. Finally, Veronica shoots Seth, freeing him from his nightmare, but leaving her in horrified grief to deal with the events that have occurred. And Roxy, that is the fly.
That's the fly.
Yikes.
Yeah, yikes indeed. This movie is nuts, and apparently, like, won an Oscar for the effects with the fly creature and stuff.
I could see it.
Especially, like, compared to what it had to contend with back in the day. And I think the guy who worked on this, he also worked on a bunch of other huge movies, like Raiders of the Lost Ark, Gremlins, some other stuff that I can't remember off the top of my head right now.
Star Wars?
Maybe, actually. I think he might have.
I don't know. It feels like a Star Wars kind of thing.
Yeah.
One thing I noticed initially in the very beginning of the movie, there's as Seth and Veronica are kind of getting to know each other, Seth mentions that as a child, he puked on his tricycle. And I was like, oh, so puking on things has just kind of been this man's destiny.
I suppose so. Yeah, we didn't really go over this in the summary because it didn't really seem like it needed to add even more depth to it. But like, one of the reasons why he started working on teleportation technology is that he gets super motion sick on like any kind of transport. Like, she's driving him back to his place and he's like gripping the seat trying not to be motion sick just when they're going back. She's like, dude, what's wrong with you? And he's like, yeah, here we go. Here's this backstory thing about me puking on a tricycle.
It just strikes me as the like, I think about, like, the Star Wars Episode 1 poster where you have Anakin walking through the desert and the shadow is, like, Darth Vader's shadow. It's just, like, these little hints that, like, even from the beginning, this poor guy was destined to become what he would become.
Yeah.
I like that trope a lot.
It's a bummer. And, like, a lot of this movie is kind of dealing with the horrors of disease and aging and your body being like this alien thing that is kind of like turned against you that you don't understand.
Yeah.
And I think when it came out, a lot of people were like, is this an AIDS allegory possibly? And he was like, you can definitely see that. It's just kind of more in general disease kind of and dealing with disease. And AIDS is a horrible disease. It's more manageable now, luckily. But at the time, it was kind of a death sentence. So I can understand how people just kind of project like that. You can see it as cancer, a lot of other stuff, especially because like by the time he finds out that he has it, there's like nothing he can do about it because it's literally like merged with his DNA. So no matter what he does, like his last ditch effort to try and merge with another human in the pod to make him more percentage wise human, like that's just desperate. You know, that's not going to really work. It's just like that kind of he can't do anything else right now. He can't think of any other option.
It is the let's go to Australia where I hear there are pockets of energy that can cure cancer level of treatment. I find it very interesting that he said it was about disease generally because there is a strong sexual component to all of the horrors that we deal with in The Fly, right? We've got, obviously,
the pregnancy horror, like, too. We didn't even pregnancy touch horror, too much on that, but yeah, it's there's a horrifying nightmare scene.
I would argue that Veronica is the hero of this movie. She's the one who's kind of experiencing the horror versus Seth, who's kind of like, kind of a troublesome character for me. It's hard to tell exactly what Seth wants in any given moment. He's kind of all over the place. And I think you can kind of explain that as like the fly DNA taking over, but it like ebbs and flows, right? This idea that he wants to keep her safe, but then he finds out about the baby, and then he it's about self-preservation, but then it's also like he demands she kill him at the end by grabbing the shotgun barrel. Seth's kind of all over the place.
I think I was surprised at how quickly he turned into the fly or did the experiment for it. It's like maybe half an hour in. Like, I thought we'd get more time to kind of like get his baseline reading before that happened to him. So I think that's probably where part of, like, you're not exactly sure what he wants to an extent. He lists some stuff later how he kind of just was never really secure in who he was and didn't really know who he wanted to be because his work was just, like, taking over his life. It was the only thing that he really thought about. So I think, like, picking up on that, I think part of it is intentional and part of it is that we just didn't get enough time with him before he turn in or merge with the fly. So then it becomes a little more like, well, which part of this is him and which part of it is not.
Yeah. I mean, I would even argue that the Seth inconsistencies start from the very first moment. Like, he meets Veronica. It's very clear to him that she's a journalist. And he's like, hey, I'm working on something cool. We should talk about it. And then he takes her home and shows her the thing. And then he's like, well, wait a minute. Oh, you're not recording this, are you? It's like, I don't know. It was
she said she had interviews. I forgot how weird that was. Like, how did he not know she was a journalist? Because later he's like, what? I didn't know you were a journalist. Like, he just thought she was a girl he was trying to impress, even though she said she had interviews. Yeah. So is he just that stupid? I don't know. Yeah.
It just feels like Seth is all over the place. Veronica is consistent. She's mm-hmm. making choices. She's the one who's having, like, she's the one who's being scared.
Yeah.
And I would argue that her biggest horror is this pregnancy. You know, we get a bizarre dream sequence that felt very unfair to me.
I thought it was real. It took me a while, like several scenes afterwards, to be like, was that real or not?
Well, I thought the whole pregnancy was a dream dream. It was like, okay, so she is pregnant. This movie is just kind of all over the place. It's
very dreamlike.
To a point where I'm like,
In that part, yeah.
Yeah.
Or something. They need to be more concrete about it being a dream or whatever.
This movie is less about a story and less about its characters and more about getting cool fly effects out there. And I don't mind it. Like, it's clearly very good at what it does, but I'm just, like, disappointed. And it almost felt to me like halfway through, I was like, this is maybe the wrong lens through which to be looking at this movie.
This guy's
all over the place.
Yeah, I think it does a lot of thematic things very well personally, but I think some of the characters get a little bit lost. Like, the Stathis guy, he seems like a reprehensible creep, and then at the end, he's like sort of a heroic character, and I was like, that's
right.
Fucking weird. I don't know how I feel about that. And then, yeah, it's dealing with these bigger ideas with, like, you know, disease and aging, and then also just, like, Seth himself. He kind of, like, dies in obscurity without anyone knowing what he's accomplished, and nobody should, based on what this machine yeah. has done and what it could do in the wrong hands. But just, he's someone who let his work control his entire life.
Mm-hmm.
And then the minute that he finally meets a girl who he connects with and kind of feels like he's sort of coming out of his shell, then the worst thing imaginable happens to him, and he becomes this decaying monster and doesn't even get to really, like, live his own life. So there's, like, lost potential there as well.
Mm.
That's kind of a shame.
I mean, that's what I mean. Like, there's so many themes going on that it's like this movie can't decide what it's about. And
yeah.
I would have put disease very low on the list of things it was actually about, just because they're all so sexually twinged.
Well,
all of these
I will
horrors.
Say the sexual element is just kind of a Cronenberg thing in general. Just having things be sort of sexually charged. So I'm not saying he's not saying anything about him, but I would also say, like, that's in just everything he does. That's kind of like body horror and sexual vibes is basically his signature.
Can I tell you the first theme I thought this movie was about?
Okay.
That would have put it way ahead of its time, but I was very excited by.
Uh-huh.
My first instinct was that this movie was going to be about the danger of dating incels. Because Jeff Goldblum, very early on, is talking about, like, there's this whole extended period in the beginning of the movie where they're talking about the flesh and the nature of the flesh and how the machine doesn't understand flesh. And Jeff Goldblum says out loud, I must not know about the flesh myself. It's my job to teach this creature, but therefore I have to learn about the flesh, which spoke to me, like, there's the flesh that they're talking about, like the teleporter can't transport it. But then there's the flesh of sexuality. There's experiencing the flesh of another. And he's like, I got to learn about sex. I got to get better about sex to teach this computer how to do it. And he kind of does. Like, that is sort of what spurs on his relationship with Veronica. And then when she gets pregnant by this weird, shitty incel man who has no idea how to, like, behave rationally, and he starts, like, forcing her to, like, keep the baby and turn them into a family, like, those are the horrific things that this movie, like, was touching for me. This idea that you could get pregnant by somebody and not know who that man truly is, and then you're trapped with a monster, you've become part of this monster's life through this child. Horrifying.
Yeah, I think that's a very good angle to kind of look at this movie through. I think it didn't do enough of the work, and I don't think it was necessarily trying to say that personally, but, like, you can 110%, like, connect the dots in that way that you have just done. If you just told me that before, like, I had seen it, I'd be like, yeah, I could completely read it through that as well. Which I think, more to your point that you were talking about, how it's dealing with so many themes here and doesn't seem to nail them down as succinctly in that way, is it does leave a lot of interpretation, because I think I see so much of, like, her having to deal with the ailing disease that is taking over his body and, like, not being able to do anything about it either. So I feel like it's also about like, if you've ever known someone who has gone through a disease that you can't control whatsoever, you know, and yeah. seeing their body slowly degrade, seeing their mind slowly degrade, and just being completely helpless. Because he didn't start out as this, like, insectoid man, you know. He was, like, awkward, but he seemed very, like, sweet and genuine, and their attraction seemed a little bit awkward, but still, like, believable and, like, sweet. And then, yeah, after this overtakes him and stuff, like, she can't do anything about it. He can't do anything about it. The only thing he can kind of right. do is push her away at that one point. But then the fly instincts take over, and he does what he does. And then I think... the theming that you were talking about where it's like, yeah, you don't really know this person also comes into play. So I guess it's just kind of like how maybe you sympathize with the characters in the story might kind of determine how you view that. And I think
yeah,
to the point where we were talking about how maybe Seth doesn't feel as nailed down, that makes it like way more malleable to kind of be like, how do we view this? So I think also to your point, I attach more to Veronica's viewpoint and kind of how it seemed like she was kind of helpless to help him with this or do anything about it. And then, yeah, she's got this pregnancy that she is absolutely horrified about and is like, I need to get it out of my body immediately.
Yes.
And then when she goes to talk to this doctor about it with Stathis is like, okay, in the middle of the night, okay, I'll see what I can do, I guess. And he is able to track down a doctor, but then the doctor is being shitty about it to be like, oh, I sense maybe some hesitation. And like... No, they're here in the middle of the night. She knows what she wants to do, fucko. Shut right. up. And then he's like, well, is it yours, Stathis? And he's like, no. And he says, like, it's the child of a deformed man or something. I can't remember how he
phrased it. I thought that was very artful and a beautiful way to state it. I thought that was, like, actually pretty poetic.
Yeah, I mean, like, what
it's
else?
The truth?
Yeah, what else would you say? And, like, yeah, their worry is that the baby is not going to be okay, and that she wouldn't survive it anyway. But then
you imagine, Roxy?
Uh-huh.
Can you imagine if he had said, okay, have you ever seen the 1956 movie The Fly?
Uh-huh. It exists within the universe.
You'd be like, it exists in the universe that it's remaking? I think that would be cool. Everything scary that happens in this movie is about your body turning against you. It's about, for Seth, it's about, you know, becoming the fly, but then he becomes, again, which supports my incel theory. It's like this scary thing is happening, but you don't want to show that you're afraid. So he's like, I'm creating the Brundle Museum of ears and teeth.
Yeah, his way of coping with it, yeah.
But then you have Veronica, who has, like, pregnancy without a fly is scary. Like, it's a horrifying thing. Like, your body changes and fucked up things start happening. And then a creature expels out of you. Like, that's horrifying. And then
it sure is.
Stathis gets his arms and hands or his hand and leg burnt off. Right.
Yeah. Like, well, he's just like watching.
Upsetting.
Yeah.
Upsetting. I don't like it. I think we've talked about this on the podcast before. This kind of like upsetting idea that like everything that is me is contained in this meat body. So how can all of my ideas and art and love just end if somebody hacks into this big hunk of meat? It just feels so like disconnected to me, but like it's a scary idea. Bodies are scary. I get why you could build a career out of body horror.
Truly. Yeah. And he has, honestly.
Cronenberg, he caught his theme and he's doing it.
Yeah, and there's so many stages where they're showing him gradually like deform into this creature. I think there's 6, and technically there was 7 that was like in a deleted scene, which I know a couple of like little factoids that I looked into for this movie. And
hit me with some factoids.
All right. So there was a cut scene that had Brundlefly merging a baboon and a cat to see if his splicing thing would work. And so it turned into this horrifying creature that attacks him, and then he viciously kills this puppet monster creature that has emerged. And test audiences hated it so much just because, like, seeing this smaller creature that, like, he had done this to and then he murders viciously, like, he had enough going for him for the audience to maybe turn against him or not see him as sympathetically. You don't need to add this. This kind of it muddies it further.
Huh. Okay. Yeah, but, like, he was a pretty likable character up to that point, I guess.
Well, he's like sympathetic, you know, like you pity him in most ways, especially because like he has that scene where he kind of talks about how his empathy is like being taken over and like the horror of, you know, not only your body turning against you, but your mind that then you can't control it, because he is very lucid, unfortunately, throughout a lot of this. And that's another reason why it's so terrifying, because he is understanding the horrible things that are going on, you know, in that way. And so he had another stage in his transformation when he did this as well. But then when they cut the baboon cat hybrid scene, we didn't get to see it. So there's that. Also, Mikey, The Fly was adapted into another type of media, another type of performance media. Do you want to take a random guess at what you think it could have possibly been?
Oh, okay. This is interesting. Was it a play?
Close. It was an opera.
Huh.
They made The Fly opera in 2008, which was just like a straight up adaptation. And it was actually directed by Cronenberg, which is
interesting.
Insane to me. And I need to look that up to see what kind of song. I can't even imagine how that would be, what kind of songs they make up for it.
That kind of makes sense to me. That feels like a good medium for this story, where it's just
very
like big and grandiose. And not necessarily about something, but more about like living in this individual horror moment. I kind of like that idea.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think the score in general that they chose for this movie, like a lot of movies at this time had more of like a synthy soundtrack, but this had like an orchestrated soundtrack. And I think it works really well, especially in the super dramatic moments. I think it was a great choice. And to that note, also, there was supposed to be a The Fly theme song that was like a love theme that was, I think, titled Help Me, performed by Brian Ferry. That was supposed to play in like the end credits, but they were like, I don't think that really fits anymore thematically. So sorry, Brian Ferry, we're not going to put it in here, but that exists.
You know what, Roxy, I actually read that fact, and I know that they did produce that song, and when they decided not to use it in The Fly, they just saved it and used it for Vanilla Ice to turn into the Ninja Turtles rap at the end of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2 Secret of the Ooze.
Okay, and it was also called Help Me.
It was also called Help Me.
Okay.
It was called, it went, go the fly, go the fly, go, go the fly, go the fly, go.
Well, I'm glad they got some use out of it, because The Fly wasn't using it. And then the last little tidbit I know is that Jeff Goldblum and Gina Davis were actually like dating at the time of this movie. They actually got like married, Mikey. Did you know this? They were married for like four years or something. They did like four different movies together, including this movie. And apparently during scenes that Gina Davis had with John Getz, who is like the shitty ex-boyfriend guy, Goldblum got like so jealous that they literally had to tell him to leave the set. Like, I don't know what was going on, but he like got super jealous about it. They don't have like a kissing scene. They don't even have any sort of like intimate scene whatsoever. So it's so weird that he just got that jealous about it.
Nobody talks enough about how weird it would be to date an actor and just like, I guess part of their job is just making out with somebody who's not me. And you know,
if you're on set for it.
Professionals can handle it. I'd be weird about it. And therefore, I would know to stay off set that day.
Yes.
I would have a personal day.
Mm-hmm. Which he should have done that, but I guess everybody else, they had to tell him, like, just, you can't be on set, dude, just go.
You gotta go.
Gotta go.
Good old Jeff Goldblum. The last thing I gotta say about this movie, Roxy, is ultimately, I think it was pretty messed up for them to cast a man in a fly suit to play this role and not get an actual man-fly hybrid.
I mean, how many are working in entertainment these days, Mikey? That can't be easy.
More than you'd think, Roxy. Okay. More than you'd think.
Okay. I get it. It's my ignorance on the man-fly hybrid.
Yeah, you're the problem.
Demographics right now currently working in Hollywood.
Yeah, I'll send you a report.
I did want to ask you, Mikey, what do you think of Jeff Goldblum's performance in this movie in various different stages of his performance? Any one of them you want to talk about?
Each stage of his performance better than the last. He's having so much fun.
Truly.
He's being a silly goof. I love Jeff Goldblum's performance. Like, I didn't love this movie's story, but I love watching Jeff Goldblum perform this in this film. What a joy.
It's so
He's
fun.
So weird.
He really is. He plays it so, like,
what did you
weird,
think?
Weird and strange, even before he's a fly.
Right. Even before he's a fly, he has fly-like tendencies.
Something. Like, it's so strange when he takes Veronica to his apartment for the first time. They walk in, and he immediately just sits down at a piano and starts, like, playing a piano. And she's like, what are we doing here? Right. Like, what? He plays it for a really long period of time, and he's like, hey, do you want a cappuccino? I got a cappuccino maker that's, like... Actually, from a restaurant. It has a little eagle on top, which I guess at the time period, cappuccino machines had metal eagles on top of them. I don't know. But he keeps talking
Roxy,
about it.
Doesn't this guy read as a fucking incel?
No, he just reads as someone.
I got this coffee machine, and girls love coffee, and I got it here for you. And check it out. Come check it out.
It reads more like he's inexperienced or like maybe even a virgin or something. Like, he's just not used to dating. It didn't seem like he felt entitled to her the way
that's
an
true.
Incel
that's true.
Would.
He doesn't take that one last dark step.
Yeah,
into
no. He's just like very inexperienced is what it felt like.
Although the fly is a metaphor for him taking that last dark step.
I mean, that's when his empathy disappears. You know, is when he becomes that. Like, mm-hmm. a monster that you can't empathize with anymore because it's now actively hurting people as opposed to what he was just suffering in his deformity before. But, yeah, like, and then they go out on this date, and so there's this whole thing where he's like, oh, yeah, Einstein just had, like, one set of outfits because she's like, do you ever change your clothes? And he's like, oh, yeah, these are clean. So he just has, like, five copies of the exact same outfit, like, his uniform. He's like, yeah, just one less thing to think about. And so... she goes out and, like, buys him, like, a cool leather jacket. And so, like, after he's gotten his fly or his initial teleportation and stuff and feels more secure about, like, growing into who he thinks he's supposed to be, he, like, wears the jacket and has, like, a red shirt under it. And, like, there was a point where she said she doesn't wear jewelry at all. And then, like, he buys her a little necklace when they're on this date. And so she wears jewelry for, like, the first time you've seen her in the movie. And she wears that necklace, like, the entire time, even when things are fucked up.
Mm.
So there's just, like, cute little things there to kind of, like, add to their character, to kind of, like, show them changing and growing together, which makes it even more upsetting them with what happens to them.
You know, Veronica really gives Brundle a hard time about wearing the same outfit every single day, but nobody gets mad at newspaper comic strip characters for doing that. Do you think Calvin ever changed his clothes? Do you think that Dennis the Menace was trying out different fashions? No, it's just understood.
Yeah, like Doomsbury doesn't change his clothes. John Arbuckle doesn't change his clothes. Garfield has no need to do that either.
Garfield's nude.
Exactly. He doesn't need to change his clothes by wearing any.
People forget. Garfield is nude.
Yeah, deal with that. Now you all have to think about that. That's in your brain now.
Roxy, was there anything else about the fly you wanted to talk about?
Oh, Cronenberg did have a little cameo in this, which apparently it was because Gina Davis asked him if he would do a little cameo, because he's not like Stephen King, I guess, who loved to do cameos or whatever, or M. Night Shyamalan, who fucking just makes himself into characters.
I truly respect that about Cronenberg, learning that just now.
Yeah, like, he wasn't even going to do it until Gina Davis was like, well, could you? And then he has been, like, an actor in some things, but, like, he is an actor in that way, where it's, like, he didn't just insert himself, where he's, like, the obstetrician in the nightmare fly larvae birth scene.
Oh, is he?
Okay. Yeah, which, like, I didn't know that until later, because I didn't really have, like, as much as I've heard his name and know, like, what a legend he is, I didn't actually really know what he looked like until we watched this movie and I was looking up information on him. So, yeah,
I thought he was playing the larva, but
I know, right?
No, that makes more sense. I knew he was in that
scene. They have the same facial features, so, you know, I can see why you would be confused about that.
Yeah, there was originally a version of that scene where the nurses around them said, is that your baby? delivered the larva.
So, Mikey, you got anything else you want to say about the fly?
No.
All right, Mikey. So we have a rating system down here in the scary basement, which is out of 5 severed thumbs total. And 2 of those are our own thumbs, which we are not severing. They're attached to our bodies. So we have this basket of hands over here that we can have up to 3 additional thumbs to use for our ratings. So, Mikey, out of 5, what would you give The Fly 1986?
I'm giving it 3 thumbs up.
All right.
It's a little bit better than half. Like, it's always tough for me when a movie, like, has a clear objective and it's just not an objective I'm into. So I'm like, yeah, I know what you're doing, and you're doing it good. You are making great fly effects. it hits at some primal fears, but it just never felt connected. And listen, this is where I was going to talk about the Jeff Goldblum performance. What a joy. What a joy to watch him.
It truly was. Really.
And that's really all I've got to say about it. He's great. I gave it 3 thumbs up. So let me just grab one extra thumb from the big box of hands and add it to my thumbs.
There you go. Very solid.
What grade would you give it?
I did a little bit higher. I gave it a 3.5. So I'm going to take one and one of these halves over here that we've gotten from many other 0.5 ratings we've done down here.
It's like Subway. When somebody orders a 6-inch, they just put the other 6-inch aside and keep it ready.
You don't want to waste a good thumb. Why would you waste that? It's still good.
Hey, I've said it for years.
So I gave it 3.5. I think it's a lot more tragically like romantic than I thought it would be. I like a lot of the theming it's working with. And like by the end of it, the way that the characters, the music, and just the way that it grabs the shotgun barrel and it's just like, end me. It really got me at the end, made me kind of like sit with it. I think it dealt with a lot of different themes. I think they hit enough for me to still give it a 3.5. But yeah, it's not perfect. It didn't get it up to that 4 because I think it maybe needed to do a few less and drill down more maybe. But still great overall, great effects, as you said. The performances are really fun. Yeah, highly recommend it. 3.5.
Yeah, I get it. And you're right. That shotgun scene is very evocative. I was less emotionally moved by that shotgun scene at the end, and it was more just like, break up with him, which they had dramatized by shotgun.
She did it. She pulled the trigger. She ended that relationship in more ways than one. Yep.
Got over it.
Truly. All right, Mikey, do you have a question for me?
Boy, do I. Roxy, we saw Jeff Goldblum teleport with a fly, bond with it at a molecular level. Mm-hmm. If you had to pick an animal to take with you into the teleport pod to bond with at a molecular level, what animal would you pick?
So humans are animals, right? Can I bond with like an Olympic champion of some kind and like gain their ability to like jump really high or run really fast?
I don't know. That feels...
Is that getting not around it? Is that not beating in the question?
It's about trade-offs. It's like, what part of your humanity are you sacrificing for an animal part?
Okay,
can't
well...
Can't just get double human?
I mean, that I feel like that's the ultimate goal, especially since we saw what happened with the fly. But still, who knows what the fuck would happen? Maybe I get super cancer or something.
Right, yeah, the half cancer that guy had combines with your half cancer.
Yeah, exactly. Not great. I guess if I had to choose an animal, it's kind of hard. I don't know. Maybe a dog, because they're, like, pretty loyal, and so even if I merge with it or something, you'd still have the kindness and empathy of a dog.
Right.
So, like, even if I was some sort of creature, I don't think I'd have to worry about harming anyone. And then, you know, werewolves are pretty cool. I have a feeling I'd probably look something like a werewolf, right? Which isn't the worst thing to look like.
I think that's a great idea, Roxy, because you're right. Like, so much of the horror of the fly is Jeff Goldblum becoming an insect, and he talks about how insects are about self-preservation and don't like politics.
Uh-huh.
Like, a dog, worst case, if you succumb to your dog urges, then you're just a playful best friend.
Yeah.
You could chase a tennis ball.
Exactly.
You won't hurt anybody. That's a good idea.
Yeah, what about you, Mikey? What would you pick?
The opposite. I want a shark.
Okay, yeah, you're just going to become a menace. But could you breathe? What, you... Half lung capacity if you're merging? I don't know.
I get the sense I would turn into a kind of king shark-like creature from Suicide Squad, that I would just become a big shark man, and I would have infinite strength, and I could run fast and also swim fast, and a big jaw to bite things, such as locks.
Okay, locks. And you never have to do another puzzle again, Mikey. You can just bite it with your powerful jaws and solve it.
And listen, we've been down in the scary basement for long enough. Puzzles are a huge part of my day. Just
it's
getting
true.
Down here, I have to solve a tile puzzle that reveals the red gem. Yeah, I just bite through the tile puzzle with my big shark jaws.
Also, you get a cool theme song. You know about the Street Sharks, right, Mikey?
Okay.
Or children of the 90s
sharks?
To some degree. Street Sharks, Jossum.
Could have sworn I dreamt the Street Sharks. I wanted a Street Shark toy. I remember seeing the fin cutting through the gravel, and I saw the toys, but I never watched the show. And I could have sworn I had imagined that.
My brother had Street Shark toys. That is my main interaction with them. And actually, I found the intro to it. Tavern might be able to insert this in here. I'm going to copy-paste this, send it to you.
Now this is cool. It's much sexier than I thought it was
going to
be.
Yeah. They bite, they fight. I kind of remember
shark,
that part.
Half man. Got a little saxophone.
That's... Yeah, they're like biting metal beams and shit. This would be you, Mikey.
Yeah, that's me.
Was Jossum just like their... like catchphrase. I remembered it being in the song for some reason.
That feels like the reason you invent a Street Sharks. You come up with that pun, you're like, Jossum!
God, they're rollerblading!
You're off to the races.
My brother had the one that rollerbladed. So he's a Street Shark, he's a shark man, and has rollerblades. The most radical, like, 90s thing you could ever design.
I think I would take a shark and a pair of rollerblades into the pod.
There you go, there you go. Now you truly get to become the Street Shark. Love it. Anyway, Mikey, so we made a bet last week for this movie.
Mm-hmm.
The bet was how many total number of times is the word fly said? And so if it was like fly boy or something, that doesn't count. It has to be fly singular in the script.
Right. And I did find a PDF of the script. I did a control F. I said 15. How many did you say?
I said 9.
You said 9. Well, the answer is 7. Less flies said out loud than either of us would have guessed.
Yeah.
But obviously, you're going to take it.
I guess so.
That means, Roxy, you win with, and add up another point to your total. The standings are at Roxy with 44 points, Mikey with 33 points, Ty with 4.
Damn. Okay. Yeah. I kind of thought I was going to lose this week. So I was like, surely they're going to say fly more, but I guess less is more. 7 times the fly.
Somebody who does not think less is more is the giant mechanical beast lumbering in with still his mechanical wings on his back, the demon bot.
They're pretty cool, though, I gotta say. I do like the wings this week, demon bot. I gotta say, they give you a certain something.
Thank you for saying so, Roxy. I worked very hard on them. For next week, you must watch the 1993 film Jason Goes to Hell, The Final Friday, which was definitely the last of the Friday the 13th movies. They never made another one. Don't fact check me. It's true.
What? Okay.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah. Jason Goes to Hell.
This movie was my shit as a kid. It was on TNT all the time. I think it might suck, but I'm very excited to watch this movie.
I have somehow never seen this. Friday the 13th was like never one of my favorite series, despite like how, I guess, like, is important the right word? Foundational, maybe, for the slasher genre that it has been.
It does feel to me like the original slasher, your number one overall draft picks, if you're drawing slasher monsters, has to be Jason, it feels like.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where I feel like I know it without having to watch it. It's just like he just hacks up kids every time. Like, that's all he does. There isn't really a lot of nuance going on, usually. But this movie, I have heard, is insane and goes in very different directions to an extent.
That is going to change with this movie, for sure. Roxy, we got to make a bet for next week. Here's my pitch. What if we go timestamp of the first kill in Jason Goes to Hell, The Final Friday?
Okay, I think with a title like this, it's just going to, like, start with a kill. So my guess is 30 seconds into the movie, we will get our first kill. What about you, Mikey?
I also think it's early, but I think they're going to take some time to set up a scene. So I'm going to say 4 minutes in.
4 minutes, okay.
All right, bet's locked in.
All right. So, Mikey, we've been talking about a lot of things that have been making us sad, upsetting us intellectually, emotionally, thematically, your body turning into a fly and all that. So how about we talk about things that are making us happy this week? So, Mikey, what went on in your life that made you happy this week?
The thing that's making me happy this week, Roxy, Kate Winslet's bush in Titanic.
What? Roxy- huh?
Kate Winslet's bush. Here's the thing about Kate Winslet's bush in Titanic. You do
like,
see it.
Like, her... Okay. Her pubic hair. This is what we're talking about?
Her pubic hair, yes.
Okay. Okay, gotcha.
My girlfriend and I were talking about Titanic.
Okay,
and
like you
I do.
I do
love her very much.
In 2023?
She was like, that movie was PG-13, right? Do you see her boobs in that movie? And I was like, not only do you see her boobs, you see her bush. And she was like, no, you don't. And I was like, you absolutely do.
I didn't think you did.
on YouTube and went frame by frame as I did as a child. And yes, indeed, you do see the bush. It's a very quick shot. It happens very quickly. And in fact, my girlfriend was initially arguing that we do not see the bush.
I thought you just saw the illustration. I thought we saw his illustration blocking her body, like with her head above it. So you're seeing more like his drawing of her nudity instead of her actual nudity.
You do see that. But also, even in that shot, her boob is sticking up over the sketch pad.
Yeah, I did not remember that as a child the way you did.
In the moment when she drops her shawl or whatever it is, we get a quick flash of the bush. Kate Winslet did perform that scene and showed it, and we had to pause it. And when my girlfriend turned up the brightness, she said, "Oh." And I did do a little sketch. I'll show it just to you of Kate Winslet.
Oh, so okay.
I'd illustrate where exactly you see the
with
bush.
All of the arrows, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 arrows to make sure you can't miss it.
So is this I'll when probably you were post like trying on Scary Basement Twitter.
Yeah, please do. Is this when you were trying to like describe it to your girlfriend? And she was like, "No, surely not."
Yes, she's like, "No, it's not. No, it's just darkness." I was like, "No, no, no. Here's where you can see it." And yeah, I did make a drawing that I'll show all of you.
You need to frame it, Mikey. Bush. Send it to
That's
Kate.
That's what's making me happy.
Just being right. I think she would like that.
Roxy, what's making you happy?
The thing that's
whose bush is making you happy this week?
It's not a person, it's a place, I guess. I took a road trip with my folks and went to the Oregon coast for like the first time in years. I can't even actually remember the last time I went.
Mm-hmm.
Got to walk on the beach, Mikey. Got to see a sunset over the ocean.
That's beautiful.
Just got to adventure. I know I went to so many antique malls and thrift stores and everything. It's pretty great. I haven't been a road trip in a long time either, which was just fun. I kind of love road trips and I just don't go on them very often. I mean, obviously pandemic happened, but you know, road trips can cost money, or like if you're going with friends, you have to get people's schedules to meet up, and also they have to like doing that. So I haven't
gone that's a big problem.
As many like friend road trips or anything. I know we kind of went on like a mini one from Portland to Seattle, like what, last year?
Oh, yeah.
2 years ago or something, which was fun.
Yeah, you and me in a car together.
Yeah. So it's just kind of like the idea of road trips. I love them so much. So many of my favorite stories are just kind of like about journey stories, which what is a journey if not like a big road trip, you know?
Sure. Oh, dude, road trips rule.
They really do.
You get some tunes.
Yeah. I got to try so much different food. Got a couple good deals at thrift stores, got a couple presents for folks' birthdays coming up too, which is nice, taking care of that.
Perfect.
This jacket I'm wearing today is super warm. It's basically just like wearing a blanket all day. And when I'm sick and feeling like shit, it's the perfect thing to wear. So somehow I knew
very
I needed
cozy.
This. It is, truly. All right, it is now time for haunted plugs. First of all, make sure you follow Scary Basement on Twitter, which is @scary_basement. And on Instagram, which is @scarybasementpod, all one word. Mikey, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter @secretblimp, and you can find me on Twitch at twitch.tv/secretblimp.
I am on Twitter as RedMageRoxy, and I am on Twitch as RedMageRoxy as well, where I stream 3 days a week, every Tuesday, Thursday, and Sunday. Also, make sure to give us 5 stars on iTunes or wherever you are listening to podcasts.
And hey, leave a review if you can. That really helps us out. Another way you can help us out is by checking out the Patreon for our podcast network, Super NPC Radio. You are just going to go to patreon.com/supernpcradio. And if you sign up, you can get bonus episodes of Scary Basement called Press X to Scream, which cover horror video games. Roxy and I host a video game podcast once a month that is also hosted by some of our friends the other weeks of the month. And also, you get access to the years and years of content from the rest of the video game loving folks over at Super NPC Radio.
Don't forget to share this podcast with your friends. You know they're gonna love it. And as always, do not sign any contracts offered to you by Demon Robot.
It's always a mistake. See you next week.